Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big-time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd on the Double with the Double S Express.
So you want to play with magic? Boy, you should know what you're falling for. Baby, do you dare?
Good evening one more time, everybody. Sean Wally awaiting the arrival of Sean Boyd here for On the Double with the Double S Express, show 65. Another week and so much to talk about in the sports world or the world in general. As goodness, who could believe the news reports late this afternoon or early evening, depending on where you're located, of the passing of comedian Robin Williams. Goodness, condolences to his family. And we know he had battles with alcohol and who knows what else. And you would think such a funny, gregarious, happy guy. But unfortunately, there were still some demons in the closet. And apparently he couldn't get past those, and just definitely sad to hear. And going along those lines, you've got the accident with Tony Stewart in the sprint car competition Saturday night in New York. And it's unfortunate that aggression got the better of Kevin Ward Jr. after Tony Stewart was involved in a wreck with Ward. Ward gets out of the sprint car and is on foot on the track. And if you happen to see the video, you probably wish you hadn't. And it was just so sad to see that a young 20-year-old driver who had been racing competitively since he was 4 years old was Kevin Ward Jr. Unfortunately, he lost his life doing what he loved Saturday night. They say things happen in threes. Let's hope there is not one more high-profile passing in the next few days. That one is too many for sure. Sean Wally here waiting for Sean Boyd to join us and hook up the Double S Express for show 65, a big show for you tonight. Two great guests tonight. Big time guest number one around 7:10 will be Bill Wixey, the morning news anchor at Q13 Fox. Bill has been in the broadcasting world for many, many years, all over the country in the sports world and now at the news desk. And then at 7:30 tonight, Jimmy Shane, the driver of the Oh Boy Oberto Unlimited Hydroplane. It'll be great to talk to both of those guys and get their insight on what they do and the sports world and how they have been where they are and how they the path they took to get there. And I know that Bill has a lot of thoughts on all things Mariners, Seahawks, and the unfortunate passing of Robin Williams as well. So we'll get into that here shortly with Bill Wixey. And of course, the NFL preseason started Thursday evening. The Seahawks and Broncos went at it in Denver, and it was an interesting contest. Hard to have either team get into a rhythm, not only with all the penalties called, but also the fact of the very long, nearly an hour lightning delay. And there is a lot of interesting weather activity up and down the West Coast and the Southwest. A lot of lightning activity. Who knows if that has anything to do with it, but we will do our best to get connected here, stay connected, and bring you show 65 here of On the Double with the Double S Express. And as I was mentioning, the NFL preseason kicked off this weekend, games all Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And what can you say? A lot of intrigue, a lot of stars not playing, some for health reasons, nagging injuries, and some they just don't want to put in harm's way. And of course, in Seattle, there was no sign of Marshawn Lynch, who just recently reported to training camp. And you had other stars in other cities not playing. Calvin Johnson of the Detroit Lions, arguably the best receiver in the NFL, did not play, which I definitely understand it. I get it. A lot of the veterans, especially the big name stars, the big money guys, don't necessarily need to play and put themselves in harm's way. But at the same time, you're charging the fan full price. You're not giving them a break. You're not giving them any kind of discount for buying preseason tickets. And the fact of the matter is, games are not selling out. more often than not, people are not paying full price to go to the preseason games. There's still thousands of people that do go, and everybody loves football, and the first home game of the year is in the preseason, great to go to. But it's just, why? When you are charged full price and you're getting an inferior product. Yes, it's great to hear stories and see the guys that are fighting for their NFL lives, who are maybe on the bubble, and maybe they were drafted late, or the fact is they're hanging on by a thread, trying to make the team. So it's going to be interesting to see if at some point they change that and maybe fluctuate pricing in the preseason. And we'll go ahead and go on out to the holysmokenuts.com phone lines and welcome in Bill Wixie from Q13 Fox Morning News Anchor. Bill, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, Sean. How are you?
Doing good, man. I appreciate your time and goodness.
No worries.
So much to talk about with good things going in Seattle with the Mariners and, of course, the 12s going crazy there at training camp.
Oh, yeah. This is an exciting time. I mean, when have we ever celebrated a world championship and then have our baseball team in the heat of a wild card race? Pretty cool.
Yeah, with things going well at Safeco Field in the last week, 5-1 on the homestand are the Mariners. It's a sight we haven't seen in, some say, 7 years, a series as important as the one that starts right now against the Blue Jays.
Oh, heck. I mean, it's been longer than that. It's been a decade, really, since they've been in any sort of contention, you know, this late in the season. I mean, they had that year with McLaren. I don't remember what year that was, and they just completely fell apart there at the end. But, you know, they've, since 2001, it doesn't seem like they've had much of a sniff. So it's nice to see them competitive late in the season, and they have, you know, one of the best pitching staffs in baseball, and it's, really exciting to watch their games because they're always in games. I just wish they could score some runs and pull ahead every once in a while, mainly on these weeknight games, because I got to go to bed early. So it would be nice if they put this thing away early tonight and then I can go to bed.
Yeah, definitely. I hear you there with the day job duties for sure. And it's nice to see the additions that Jack Zarencic, GM of the Mariners, made at the trade deadline. They weren't huge splashes. The biggest name, obviously, Austin Jackson coming over from the Tigers. But they're now scoring 4.4 runs a game so far here in August, and that's about a run better than they were previous to those trades.
That's pretty good. You got to think Jackson also probably upped that average a little bit, driving 4 runs yesterday. But you know what? I think that's great to hear. I didn't realize that they were scoring runs at a better clip. They certainly need to. I was at that game on Saturday when Lou was enshrined in the Hall of Fame. And that was incredibly frustrating. They went down a run, and you just kind of got the feeling, oh, man, you know, they got to come back from a run down. This seems so daunting, you know. That's one of the frustrating things when you just can't hit.
Now, talk about your experience there with Lou a little bit and seeing that enshrinement in his speech and what his former players and coaches had to say about him and what that was like.
Yeah, no, that was cool. Well, so Lou, you know, I mean, what do you say about the guy? I mean, the thing that was great about Lou, and I was lucky enough to cover him for many years, he fought, you know. He fought not just with, like, umpires and the bases and, you know, sometimes even with his players, but, he fought with GMs, you know, famously, you know, and he would always say, you know, I need a bat. I can't win unless you get me a bat. And, you know, they never really came through for him, and ultimately that's kind of what drove him out of town. They couldn't give him what he needed, he felt, to be, you know, really competitive here. And, you know, what he did in 01, I mean, how can you forget that? I mean, that guy, you know, I mean the way they manufactured runs, the way they put the game in motion, it was amazing. Pitching and defense and just, you know, scratching runs out and scratching a whole bunch of them out every single night. Nothing like, I've never seen anything like that. 116 wins was incredible. Incredible. But Lou was fiery and fun. He was, you never knew when Mount Lou was going to erupt either, you know. So you go back into the clubhouse, and it was always a very quiet, kind of somber place after games. And you'd look at Lou, and he had his eyes were just red, you know, like he'd been, you know, he'd been through, you know, battles, you can tell, you know, he'd been through a lot. and you just looked at him, and he was just spent. And if you asked the wrong question in the wrong way, he was going to just erupt. And I remember there was one game where it was a reporter who you all know, and he was not a sports reporter. He came in, and he was kind of doing another kind of assignment that night, I guess, and he got pulled over to the ballpark. And so he goes into the clubhouse after the game, and he gets some post-game, goes into Lou's office, and he asks him, what's it going to take to motivate your team, Lou? And he pauses, and he looks up, and he looks at him. He says, what do you mean motivate? What do you mean motivate? He clears his desk, and he throws everybody out of his office, and that was the end of the press conference. Don't challenge Lou on motivating his team, I guess, is the bottom line on that one. But great to see him get in. Deserved best manager we'll ever see in Seattle. I'd love to see another great one, but, man, you tough to top Lou.
Bill, you're doing news for Q13 and Fox. You're at the anchor desk there for the morning news show. But in previous years, you were a sports guy. Did you ever have any run-ins with Lou? Positively, of course. Do you have any experiences in dealing with Lou in his years here in Seattle?
Oh, yeah. So I covered him from 98 through 2003 here in doing sports full-time. Once I moved over to news, he was gone, actually. So they hired Melvin, I guess. What was it, 2003? So that was the end of that. But Lou was awesome, and like I said, you know, in the post game press conferences, you just, you know, you had to go careful with Lou. And one night after a win, I don't know, it had been a bit of a bumpy stretch for the team. They'd lost a few that maybe they should have won, and they had a big win that night. And I asked Lou if he thought that this could be a cathartic win for his team. And he looked at me, and he said, I don't know what that means. Next question. So you had to be careful around Lou. I rephrased my question in a way that might be easier to fathom. But in the end, he did feel that it was a cathartic win for the team, it turned out.
And it's great having the calendar be almost mid-August, and the Mariners actually having a shot, being a game and a half out of the second wild card, and everything is in front of them if they just do what they know they can do, and Lou told them to do on Saturday.
I know. How about that? I mean, he takes it to that level. He gives the current team a pep talk. And I'd say this Toronto series is huge. You know, they got, you know, if they can take two or three from the Blue Jays, then you got the Royals playing the A's right now. So, you know, this thing can switch up quite a bit. It's kind of interesting having that five team dogfight for that last spot. I think it's kind of interesting.
You know, not to be outdone by the second wild card, the Angels are starting to falter, and they're only 4.5 up right now.
Wouldn't that be nice, right? I mean, let's sneak in there. Heck, let's get after the A's. We were down 13 games in 95. We can do this.
Absolutely, that would be great. You know, go for the gauntlet and not okay. Settle. But I guess here in Seattle, since 2001, the last time being in the playoffs, we can't be too picky.
Hey, I just want to see him get in the postseason. I've been trying to tell my son for the longest time. Like last year during the Seahawks run, I was saying, "Man, this is so much fun." But if you can imagine postseason baseball with the Mariners in the World Series or in the postseason, if you can just imagine the intensity of that. And he just laughed at me, and he said, the Mariners have never been to the postseason. He's 14 years old. So he has no frame of reference. I took him to the American League Championship Series when he was like, you know, one. He was in a baby Bjorn. He has no recollection of any Mariner playoff baseball. And so to him, it's a completely foreign concept. I want him to experience that, you know?
Wow, do you have at least photo proof to show him? Look, it really happened.
I do. I have him in that baby Bjorn at the game, and I have him across the street at the Kingdom before they blew that up, too.
Bill Wixie joining us here on the Double with the Double S Express. And Bill, shifting gears to the 12s and the world champion Seahawks. They're trying to repeat. It's going to be a tough road to hoe, but if any team's built for it, I think it's this one.
Oh, heck yeah. I think that the Seahawks are definitely loaded, and I think that they are going to bring one of the top four defenses in football. Unfortunately, the other three top defenses happen to be in our division. So it's going to be brutal. I feel really good about the Seahawks' chances, but I have to say it's going to be a gauntlet to get through the schedule that they have, particularly late in the season where they have so many division games and Philadelphia lurking there at the end. It could go a bunch of different ways, but I think whoever comes out of the NFC West is definitely going to be battle-tested, and I just fear that there may only be one team, maybe two, that get out of the NFC West just because they're going to do so much damage against each other.
Yeah, and that's going to be the interesting thing, is how much do the teams in the West beat up each other,
right?
And seeing how it all falls out in the end. And, of course, the Niners are the team everybody's thinking will challenge the Seahawks, but they've got a lot of injuries already. And then you have the Cardinals, who looked scary good in the first preseason game, winning 32-0.
Yeah, as you were just mentioning a moment ago, preseason means nada. So, you take that with many grains of salt. But, yes, the Cardinals are good. We know that. They came in here and punked us last year in our own crib, and nobody does that. So, watch out for them. That defense, as everybody knows, is just deadly. And now look at St. Louis. I mean, they improved themselves hugely in the draft, and that defense scares me to death. That defensive front is just nuts. Getting out of that NFC West is going to be a task.
Now, on the not so fun fact page, Marshawn Lynch in the news, not in a good way today. Do you have any insight on that incident in Bellevue?
No, I just heard that it was an incident where a woman was at her downtown apartment and had alleged assault, and apparently some items were taken. Police, as far as I last saw, I had not, verified this or commented on the extent of that. So, it's a complaint they're investigating, and that was the latest I heard on it.
Yeah, from all reports that I can find, it appears to be not physical and definitely not sexual. So that is at least a silver lining in the whole thing.
Yeah, but you just don't want to see your guys getting into that sort of stuff ever. So, that's not a good thing. I mean, it's been a tumultuous off season for Marshawn already. He needs to just get on the field and play.
Absolutely. I mean, he holds out of training camp wanting to get more money up front and hasn't played in a game yet, and now this happens. So he needs to definitely turn the page.
Yeah, we'll see what's happening on that. I mean, who knows? Who knows what the real story is on that? I mean, I don't have any corroboration to speak on that. That was just a report that was filed. Who knows what really happened there? I certainly don't.
Yeah, it'd be a good thing once all the facts come out, and hopefully good things to say for Lynch and the Seahawks, but we will see. Now, Bill, as we talked about, you had a career in the sports world, the sports broadcasting at the anchor desk, and made the switch over to news. Was there a lot of any tug of war internally with yourself on making that switch, and how did that come about for you?
No, not really. I needed to pay a mortgage, and I needed to feed some kids.
Absolutely.
So yeah, that was really the pull. So I was offered a deal over at Q13 to come over and report, to be a news reporter as a freelance kind of thing. This was 11 years ago, and I'd only done sports. I didn't know anything else, and then the guy, gave me a shot going out and, covering fires and murders and stuff like that, and I gave it a whirl, did the best I could. It's hard to do, right out of the box when all you've done is, talk to, athletes and covered, sports-related issues. But, yeah, it was a big wake-up call, but I did that for about 4 months, and then they gave me a shot on the anchor desk, and they offered me the job, and I've been pretty much doing that since. Fortunately for me, I've been able to dabble a bit in sports. So, like, when the Seahawks made their run in 2005 and when you know, this last season I was pretty heavily involved in the Seahawks. So that's been fun to be able to still dabble in sports, because, you know, my heart is definitely, I mean, you know, I grew up in Seattle, massive sports fan like you, you know, just, you know, this is my vernacular, you know, I grew up with this. So, you know, taking me out of that realm, you can only take me out of it so far, because, you know, I still kind of live and breathe it.
Yeah, it definitely seems like with the morning news show, you get to have a little more fun and not quite so structured that the evening news would be, and you're out at in front of CenturyLink Field and you're having, you know, good time with the 12s. And before I let you run here, Bill, I've got Sean Boyd, my co-host, now with me on the line. I want to see if he has a question or two for you.
Bill Wixie, thanks for being on, man. Thanks for being patient there. A little bit of technical difficulties, but glad to have you on the show.
No worries, man. My pleasure.
Well, man, I know that Sean's probably talked to you in depth about some of the things that are going on in Seattle, and, you know, of course, with the Seahawks break camp going on thus far, and it looks like that they will be repeating if things go right. It looks like right now in the early goings in camp, San Francisco has a few injuries. I know Arizona's on the rise along with St. Louis, but what's the feel in camp for the Seahawks?
Well, you know what? I think overall, you know, it's business as usual. That's kind of the way they approach it. You wouldn't know that these were the defending world champs. I mean, they have the same swagger that they've had, but they've had that, you know. So they've had a championship swagger without even having the championship, and now that they have it, it's just kind of fulfilled a destiny. So I think they're moving with a purpose, and they just say, hey, you know, like last season, what's next? So, you know, they're gonna you know, bounce back from this, you know, that preseason loss and move on this Friday, and you know, they'll make some adjustments. They'll get some more guys back. They'll get some looks at some other guys, and I think that's really what it's about. I mean, it's about, you know, guys trying to make a name for themselves and try to make a team that, you know, is really, really hard to make. You know, I mean, there's not going to be a huge number of surprises making this roster, because you know, they're stacked. So, quiet confidence, I think, is probably the best way you can put the ideology at camp right now.
Definitely, I would say quiet confidence as well. And of course, you know, there's some things going on with Marshawn Lynch, but I think those things will definitely be worked out. What I wanted to ask you is, you know, from my time up in the Pacific Northwest, and I got to say, Bill, I really, really admired, you know, actually watching you develop into the person that you are today. What I mean by that is you're more of a hybrid, if you will. So you do the news anchoring, and at the same time on the weekends, you wind up doing sports. And, you know, how do you find the time to balance the two? Is it sports performance, or is that just something that, you know, you've elected to do?
Yeah, I think it goes back to my sports background. I mean, I just, you know, I grew up such a big sports fan here, and when, you know, last season happened and our station got the Seahawks partnership, you know, they turned to me and said, you know, hey, would you want to do these fan events? You know, we'll put together these Blue Friday parties and do that at CenturyLink Field. And then, you know, as the season went on, I was kind of throwing the idea of, you know, we should probably go on the road and, like, talk about how the 12s are traveling with the team this year. And so I did. I traveled with the team late in the season and covered the fans, which is a really rough job, let me tell you, and had an absolute blast. And it took me all the way to the Super Bowl, and we did that. And then we did the parade here, and yeah, so how do I fit it in? It is my schedule. It's just what I did. I mean, I racked up a ton of comp time last year for working, you know, basically 7 days a week towards the end of the season. But I wouldn't have traded it for anything. I mean, that was the time of my life, man. To watch the Seahawks going down the stretch and you know, from San Francisco on. So, you know, going into New York and winning that, and then having that kind of be the Super Bowl preview, and then, you know, taking care of business in the NFC Championship, and then back to New York, and I mean, it was just a dream. So it was a beautiful thing to have my sports background and then, you know, be the, you know, news guy and to be able to meld those two worlds to create, you know, what really was a happening. I mean, it was a phenomenon. It was a cathartic time for the city. And I think what came out of that was, it was kind of magical. It was a beautiful thing for Seattle, and I was just so thrilled to be a part of it.
Bill Wixie, Q13 Fox Morning News anchor, thank you so much for your time tonight and hanging on
couple
more extra minutes, and I'll definitely look forward to running into you at the Seattle Seahawks games. I know I'll be there at a few of them, so thanks for your insight, and love to have you back on in the future and get more your personal achievements and things that have happened in your life and moving forward.
Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate that very much. And you have a great evening.
There is Bill Wixie. Follow him on Twitter at Bill Wixie. Straightforward and simple. Bill Wixie, lots of good things to say. And as we get set for big time guest number two, stick around. We'll come back with Jimmy Shane, the Oh Boy Oberto Unlimited hydroplane driver. You won't want to miss that. Go fast and turn left. After this, you're listening to On the Double with the Double S Express.
I'm gonna pop some tags. Only got $20 in my pocket. I'm looking for a come up. This is awesome.
What's my image?
What's my image?
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
I'm Chris Walls, and I'm a truck driver from Missouri. For 13 hours a night, I sit in my truck and I drive. Out of boredom, I'll stop and eat. If I'm not doing fast food, I guarantee there's a bag of chips open on my dashboard. Along with that, I'm good for about 4 liters of soda a night. That was all until Andro 400. I started out 4 months ago weighing 341 pounds. And since taking Andro 400, I have dropped 45 pounds. I'm sleeping better. There's no cravings. There's no excessive thirst. My knee pain went away. I've had some lower back issues, and I've noticed that went away. And I can only contribute that to Andro 400. One thing that Andro 400 said on the radio ad says it attacks belly fat. Well, let me tell you, it did. I've lost 6 inches. This product really does work.
So, guys, if you'd like to experience similar results, then get Andro 400, the safe, natural, and inexpensive way to boost your testosterone. Go to Andro400.com. Andro400.com.
Let's get back to great sports talk with big-time guests on the Double with the Double S Express.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd for show 65. Goodness, 65 shows. That is quite a feat that I am proud of. I know, Sean Boyd, you are as well. Hard to imagine we've been at this for 65 weeks and going strong. Big time guest number one tonight was Bill Wixie, Q13 Fox Morning News. Of course, for many years he has been in sports and sports reporting for most of his career in the last 11 years at Q13 doing news. And he had great insight on Mariners, Seahawks, and what's going on in the world of the 206. And we'll have him on again and get into Bill's personal battles that he has overcome and didn't have enough time to get into everything tonight. And we are waiting for our big-time guest number two, and that will be Jimmy Shane, the Oh Boy Oberto Unlimited hydroplane driver. Should be fun to talk to Jimmy here shortly, Sean.
But yeah, definitely great to have Bill Wixie on. And, you know, of course, as you're mentioning, Sean, you know, some of the battles that he had, one being captured back in 2009, which is one of the things that we'll definitely get into when we have him back as a guest on the show. Of course, his news anchor doing some things as far as making sure that consumers back in the camp ripped off. Money State Franchise is one of his shows that he has as well. And so, Bill Wixie, a great guy doing some huge things in the community in the Pacific Northwest.
Now, Sean, what were your thoughts on the weekend of football? Of course, your Oakland Raiders played, the Seattle Seahawks played, the 49ers got it handed to them in Baltimore. A lot of football, but a lot of sloppy football as well.
Yes, it's week one, you know, and that's the thing that we all can take away. When you're mentioning the three teams that we cover, the Seahawks, 49ers, and the Raiders, neither came away with a victory the past week, but it's not nothing to fret about. But the talks and the murmurs in Northern California and the East Bay in Oakland, it sounds like Mark Davis is starting to bellow out some frustrations here as of recent. Sounds like he wants to win one of these preseason games. And I think he's, you know, putting his energies into the wrong area right now. Of course, he has his hands full with stadium issues and talking about getting things going in Los Angeles as well. But when we're talking about the X's and O's and the football, right now I think all teams are on par. You're not going to see too much in week one. You're not going to see too much of a team's offense in the preseason. You're just going to see a lot of base offense and defense. And what you want to do as a coach is just want to make sure that the guys are getting the basics down. And we'll see in the next couple of weeks how things materialize for those three teams.
One, Johnny Football got his first taste of the NFL game, and he did fairly well. It's going to be interesting to see how everything plays out in Cleveland as the quarterback battle unfolds with Johnny Manziel and Brian Hoyer.
Yeah, you know, a lot of the times, you know, as media, we stick our nose into things and we create a hysteria because that's what we do, Sean Wally. I can tell you right now that Hoyer, this is his team. I know that Johnny Football had a great game. I believe it was 7 of 11. So he completed a fairly high amount of his passes. But what we have to realize is that was against the second unit. Now, is Johnny Football NFL ready? Yes, he is NFL ready. Will he at some point be the starting quarterback for the Cleveland Browns? Most definitely. But right now, if you're talking about, you know, a brand of work, the history of a quarterback, it has to be Hoyer. This is his team. Let him take it through. Let him start the season out. There's a long progression for Johnny Football. He did have a couple of exciting plays, of course, to use his feet. But the biggest thing is that Johnny Football learns the progression of the NFL, and that remains to be seen.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's going to be interesting all across the NFL, the players that make the team based on their play and players that don't, so that'll unfold definitely in the weeks to come. But it's time to go ahead and get back out to the holysmokenuts.com phone lines and welcome in Jimmy Shane, the driver of the Oh Boy Oberto Unlimited Hydroplane. Jimmy, thanks for your time tonight.
I'm going.
Hey, Jimmy, thanks for being on the show and, of course, taking the time out and had a busy weekend this past weekend up in Seattle with Steve Bear. Didn't quite go as well as you wanted it to, but still, I would say with all the adversities, you still had a pretty good weekend.
No, it was a great weekend for the Oberto team. We had a little bit of tough luck there in the final. We had to run a 3-mile course instead of the actual 2-mile course. We got pushed out pretty far by the Graham Trucking boat, but you know, it was a wonderful weekend, great racing all weekend long by all the teams, and it was a wonderful show in Seafair.
Now, Jimmy, I do want to ask you a question. I want you to give us an idea of the comparison, if you can, of actual, like, NASCAR or dirt track racing and hydroplane racing as far as strategy is concerned. What I'm getting at is, well, the past couple of days, we've all we all know about Tony Stewart and what happened there. But strategy on as a hydroplane racer, is there strategy to actually, you know, kind of fishtail and vulture? Is that just something that we as media bring up and hype up as you know, their drama?
Yeah, I would say that there is a good bit of strategy when it comes to driving the boat. The biggest thing is just getting the experience. There's not much time available to race in the unlimited hydroplane circuit. So the little bit of time that we do race, you have to make every single minute out on the water count. So, yeah, you do what you can to try to put yourself in the best position. Obviously, lanes are very critical when it comes to getting a good finish for a race. And you just have to really approach it as, hey, if something gets thrown at me, I have to just do the best I can with it. So we got a lot of stuff thrown at us all year long. We definitely had a target on our back. The Alberta boat's extremely fast. So we just kind of have to change on the fly, and that's what we've been doing all season long. It's been working out great.
That's the voice of Jimmy Shane, the driver of the unlimited hydroplane, oh boy, Alberto. And, Jimmy, talking about lanes and knowing where those are, number one, how do you get a sense of which is lane one and which is lane two and where those boundaries are?
It's extremely hard to do in the boat because you have so many obstacles thrown at you. We throw up a 100-foot-long rooster tail, and that kind of determines what lane the other boats are going to be in, really. You have a limited amount of space in lane one. We're allowed 30 feet off of the buoy line for lane one. And then from there out, you pretty much get a boat width plus 10 feet. So it's a kind of a judgment call when it comes to the drivers of what lane you're in. Most of the guys on the circuit now do a really good job of establishing their lane and holding it. I would say all except for one.
Well, I'm going to venture to guess who that one might be. Back when there's an incident like you had a couple weeks ago at the Columbia Cup on the Columbia River in Tri-Cities, Washington, the Dave Vilwalk-driven boat ran into yours. How do you react to that? Do you get angry, ticked off? Do you want to, you know, have words, or is that just a part of racing?
Obviously, you know, we were very upset when it happened, and it is something that comes with racing, and you look back on it now, and it's just something that happens. I think, you know, Dave tried to come off as it was a boat failure, and unfortunately, it's really hard to determine it was not a boat failure. So it's one of those things where it is just a racing incident, and you just have to take it as it is. Our team did a fabulous job getting the boat back together. We didn't know whether we were going to be able to make the final heat or not. And once we got the boat in and assessed all the damages, they absolutely went 1,000 miles an hour getting it fixed the best they could for the final. And, you know, we went out there and we had not the best boat in the world, but we had the boat that won the final at the Columbia Cup. And it was an amazing feat. It was an amazing comeback for what happened in the set of heats right before the final. They only had 45 minutes to repair the damages, and if a lot of people would have seen the materials used, they probably would have just been shaking their head because there's a lot of stuff that they use that typically you don't see on a boat.
Jimmy Shane, kind enough to join us here on the Double with the Double S Express. And of course, Jimmy, you guys have had a sensational year as far as points are concerned on the circuit. What do you accredit that to?
You know, the boat has been prepared to a T by the crew chief and the crew. Larry Hansen kind of came on board when Mike Hansen, the crew chief of the Alberto for the last 10 years, he left the team to go to the Spirit of Qatar Elstrom team, and Larry really stepped up. Larry is Mike's brother, and Larry has been doing the engine 1988 for the Madison Alberto team, and Larry stepped up. And I can tell you that Alberto boat has not been prepared better than it was this season. And it's showing because we have out-qualified all of our qualifying times by at least a minimum of 1.5 miles per hour. And it really showed in Seattle where we qualified 4.5 miles an hour faster than what the boat did last year. So it's just an amazing feat.
Now, with all of the races that you have, and of course the short season that you have in hydroplane racing, which, I guess we would call it a course or track, which track would you say is your best track, or which one do you like the most?
They all have their attributes that make them special. I really like Tri-City just because it's kind of the super speedway. It's the fastest that we've run on all season long so far. We ran a lap at 166.5 miles per hour, and I think it's one of the fastest laps in the last 10 years on the Columbia River. So I really enjoyed that racetrack. It's very challenging. All of the waves kind of get bunched up there in the first turn, and it makes it a challenge for all the drivers to get through there cleanly. I really, really like Tri-City. It's definitely one of my favorite courses, but all of them have, like I say, all of them have their little special attribute.
Now, Jimmy, how did you get involved in racing boats? And conversely, what would you say to guide a young racer trying to come up the ranks, how to get where you're at in unlimited hydroplane racing?
I was kind of born into the sport. My family raced since 1969, and I started racing when I was 8 years old in the outboard category in the J-Stock Hydro, J-Stock Runabout, and just sort of worked my way up through inboard classes, the smaller inboard classes. You saw the one-liter boats running in Tri-Cities at the Columbia Cup. I started out kind of in a class like that, worked my way up to the bigger classes, and then also the GP class that ran at Tri-Cities. I ran that class for 6 years. Then 2006, I had a shot at testing one of the unlimited hydroplanes for Ted Porter. From that point on, I knew that what I wanted to do was race unlimited hydroplanes. It was my childhood dream since I was 13 years old, and it's very, very fortunate that I get the opportunity to race in such a wonderful sport. It's spectacular. They have some of the biggest, fastest boats in the world, and I wouldn't want to do anything else.
You've got three races left, Coeur d'Alene, San Diego, and over halfway around the world in Doha, Qatar. What do you, obviously, you're looking to do well and hoping to win in each of those races, and how do you prepare for those, and do you go out early to each of those events and test the water?
Yeah, at this point, you know, in the season, we are, since we're ahead in points by 950 points, we're going to look at taking each race as, hey, we just need to stay in the lead in points. And from this point on, it's a points race. So the Alberto boat's not going to back down. If we have the opportunity to go out there and win a race, we're going to go out there and win a race. But our main goal is the National High Point Championship. So if we do not win the next three races, but we end up winning the National High Point Championship, it will definitely be winning the ultimate goal for us.
Awesome. Well, if you can make it out to Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, Labor Day weekend, a great time, Lake Coeur d'Alene, and see the unlimited hydroplanes and Jimmy Shane in the Oh Boy Oberto. Jimmy, thanks so much for your time tonight. Best of luck the rest of the way, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
There goes Jimmy Shane, the driver of the Oh Boy Oberto Unlimited Hydroplane. You can follow him on Twitter at JimmyShane1.
You know, I talked a little bit about the short season of the hydroplanes. You know, it is such a short one because there's such excitement, Sean Wally, when the hydro season comes around. And as we talked about in the Tri-Cities, of course, in Seattle, but they also travel far to Detroit, even further back east. And, you know, you have to wonder, you know, how much can these hydroplanes, you know, pretty much take as far as the toll and how much money they put into it. And these are things that we can definitely talk to Jimmy about, or talk to couple of our future guests in hydroplane as well. But awesome to have Jimmy Shane on the show. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we're going to get a recap on some of the things that have been happening during the week and what's going on now. So keep it locked in. You're listening to the best sports talk on the Double with the Double S Express.
Some tags, only got $20 in my pocket. this is awesome.
Who likes the inconvenience of car repairs? Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services, platinum service without the platinum price.
Guys, are you having trouble getting to sleep? Would you like to know the secret to getting a great night's sleep every night? Bruce Feeney discovered this secret, a new, all-natural sleep aid for men. Listen to what he says about it.
Hey, you know, I tried a product recently called Love to Sleep. It was a great product, helped me a lot. Took 3 or 4 days for it to start working in my system, and I fell asleep very quickly and got up rested. And if I got up during the middle of the night, I ended up coming back to bed and fell right back to sleep. I would recommend it to all my friends.
If you, too, would love to get a good night's sleep every night and wake up feeling great in the morning, try Love to Sleep, the new sleep aid for men. Your satisfaction is 100% guaranteed. And because Love to Sleep is all natural, it's completely safe with no side effects or risk of dependency. Go to lovetosleep.com. That's lovetosleep.com.
Let's get back to great sports talk with big time guests on the double with the Double S Express.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd for show 65, Mr. Boyd. Hard to believe, 65 shows just about in the books.
Yeah, 65 shows in the books. Still kind of going through some ups and downs, so for all of you listening to us, bear with us. We're getting these kinks and these nicks and things fixed. We'll have that back and up and running in no time, but thanks for bearing with us.
You know, Sean, since our last show 7 days ago, there's been some good baseball play, not only in the Bay, but also up in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, well, you know, right now, looks like there's a final in Kansas City. Kansas City beat Oakland 3-2. Of course, the Mariners are doing some great things right now, playing against Toronto. King Felix on the mound. It's 0-0 in the fourth. I'm thinking, Sean Wally, though, in a game like today that you probably wanted the Oakland A's to win, it's going to be a push for you when you're scoreboard watching as the Seattle Mariners trying to get a playoff spot. Right now, a game and a half out of the final wild card spot. Kansas City holds that top spot. Kansas City wins today, as I mentioned, against the Oakland A's. So it's kind of a push for Seattle. I really, really don't see them catching the Oakland A's. As far as the division is concerned, so they're going to need a little bit of help from these wild card teams. And the Oakland A's didn't do Seattle any favors.
Well, Sean, I don't know if you heard the interview with Bill Wixie when you were occupied, but I had expressed to him, you know what? At the very least, the Mariners can catch the Angels, who have been stubbing their toe and faltering of late, and they're only 4.5 games up going into today's play. So, if there's anybody that's hobbling right now, it's the Angels, and you've got Kansas City playing well. You've got Seattle playing well, 5-1 on this homestand with 3 games to go. Oakland, of course, is trying to run away with the West. And here are the Angels, you know, hobbling along. And if they don't look in their rearview mirror soon, somebody's going to creep up on them.
You know, I would tend to believe you or agree with you as far as the Seattle Mariners catching the Los Angeles Angels. I'm looking at both pitching staffs, and, you know, yeah, I will give the nod to Seattle as far as the pitching staff is concerned, but when you're looking at the Los Angeles Angels, their staff is no slouch as well. I think that when you're coming back from the All-Star break, And, of course, you know, with the Oakland A's making the adjustments and the changes that they have made, I think it takes a little bit for all teams to actually get their legs back. In a couple of weeks since the All-Star break, I know that Seattle is making that. It's just a matter of time, you know, before one of these teams, even at Kansas City, who's on fire, I think they're winners of 11 of their last 15 or something ridiculous like that. So you're getting these teams that are starting to pick up momentum and start to catch the top team, and Seattle is definitely one of them.
Yeah, Sean, and it looks like the Angels are off tonight, so getting some rest. And as you already mentioned, Toronto is in Seattle, 40,000-plus expected at Safeco Field. They're in the fourth. There is no score. And, you know, Toronto right now, if the season ended, they would be in the playoffs with that Kansas City. Toronto had the last playoff spot, second wild card, but they have lost it recently. The Yankees are right there as well with Toronto and Seattle, and they got blasted 11-3 today in Baltimore.
Yeah, this is what makes the wild card exciting. This is the reason why they implemented this some 5-plus years ago. And, you know, this makes for exciting baseball. This, you know, it used to be that teams, it was just the top teams in each division that would go to the playoffs, and it made it boring for this time of the year because a lot of the teams knew that they were out of it. They really had to have some type of miracle to put themselves back in it. This one makes the wild card great, Sean Wallian. You know, as you mentioned, there are four teams in the American League that are vying for that final spot, and each of these guys have a chance. And, you know, if you're asking me, I'm saying that the Seattle Mariners would wind up with that final spot just based on.
Well, Sean, since the trading deadline when Seattle's general manager Jack Zarenzik was able to bring over Austin Jackson from Detroit and Chris D'Onofrio up from San Diego, you know, those aren't huge names. Austin Jackson is the bigger name of the two. He's a steady, awesome defender in the outfield, patrolling center field, which Seattle hasn't had really good outfielders since, you know, you go back to Mike Cameron. When he was death to flying things, as Dave Niehaus put it, may he rest in peace, the great Dave Niehaus. And you're already seeing how those trades have helped Seattle's offense. Not only that, but you added Kendrys Morales before the trading deadline, and Seattle is scoring 4.4 runs a game here in August, and August 1st on is when all three of those players were in Seattle's lineup. And that's a run better than Seattle was averaging prior to those trades. So one run extra a game goes a long way, and they're showing so far here in August what good that does.
Yeah, and as I mentioned before, I believe that if push comes to shove, when the smoke clears, that Seattle would wind up getting that final wild card spot. But here's the problem that we're looking at. If Seattle does wind up getting that final playoff spot, what next? You have just mentioned a bunch of names, to be honest with you, Sean Wally, that I have no clue who these guys are. So if they get into the postseason by chance, where do they go with it from there? You cannot possibly tell me that they can pull a miracle out from God knows where and they do something spectacular, because I'm going to tell you to stop drinking whatever that is that you're drinking. So if they do wind up getting into the postseason, that would be a definite plus for the Seattle Mariners, but nothing further than that.
Sean, time out. First of all, wow. time out. You know sports, and you watch sports more than I do.
And
you cannot tell me that you don't know the name Kendrys Morales, and you don't know the name Austin Jackson, who started his career with the Yankees, was traded to Detroit, one of the better center fielders in the game.
I do know of the players, but when you're talking about the top players in the game, Seattle didn't do enough to plead their case as far as being a perennial that can do some damage going into the postseason. They still need some work. They still need a few bats, even though every now and again they'll have a game or two that they can put up tremendous amounts of runs. Their lack of consistency and their lack of cohesiveness will not allow them to go any further if by chance they get into the postseason.
So you're not happy with 4.4 runs a game?
I'm not saying that. That's a great stat. But when you get into the postseason and when you start to go, when you get down the stretch, what you're looking for is you're looking for who's been there, who knows what it takes to go through a seven-game series, and how to get to that next level. And to be honest with you, Seattle has not tasted the postseason in quite some time.
Oh, everybody's well aware of that, especially in the Pacific Northwest, where they haven't been in the playoffs since 2001 with the team that won 116 games. But goodness, I mean, you're talking, you know, the hitters and the guys that haven't been there. But at the same time, the pitching staff, everybody combined, starters and bullpen, now have the best ERA in the entire American League.
With that being said, their experience does not allow them to do what they need to do in the postseason. So, again, if Seattle were to play in the first round, who would they play? Would they play in Detroit? Would they play in Oakland? If they play one of those two, I can tell you that experience will bode for both of those teams over what Seattle has. Not taking anything away from what Seattle might do getting into the postseason. I'm just saying don't put so much into Seattle getting past the first round because, again, that's not – it's just not realistic. It's not realistic for that.
Well, you know, Mariner fans number one would be – and I'm one of them, and I know my co-host used to be. I mean, apparently you move south and you forget all about your previous allegiances, but Mariner fans would be ecstatic – number one, to be there, but at the same time, nobody wants a one-and-done wild card one-game playoff either. Nobody is sitting here saying, oh, well, at least we had a shot. You want that shot to have a Felix Hernandez to get you over the top. That's why you're paying him $175 million. That's why you're paying, you talked about experience, playoffs, Robinson Cano? I mean, right. Sure, maybe up and down the lineup, you know, 1 through 9 doesn't have a ton of experience because you have a few young guys that you brought up in your system, a Kyle Seager, a Chris Taylor doing good things at short, but Austin Jackson has a World Series ring.
Now, again, I understand what you're saying as far as Austin Jackson. I understand what you're saying as far as Team Philly Steelers. Nobody is saying that these players are not exceptional players, because again, we all know King Felix is the flame-throwing hurler in Major League Baseball. What we're talking about is we're talking about a cohesiveness. There's a difference between regular season play and postseason. And this is why you're saying what you're saying. People in Seattle are salivating, but people in Seattle have no clue on what it takes to go through those rounds. It has been so many years since Seattle has seen a team like that. I firsthand have seen what it takes to build what is called a solid franchise. I'm watching two teams in the Bay, one in the San Francisco Giants and now the Oakland A's, that it takes years to build a solid, solid farm club franchise. I cannot say that for the Mariners farm club. I can truly say that what Billy Beane does in Oakland and how they build their franchise is second to none. And until Seattle can get that consistency going, not taking anything away from them, but until they can develop that consistency, they will be a team that will be in the first round and not expected to go to the second round. Can they? If an injury happens to King Felix, who steps up? Who fills that void and then and what other pitcher comes up? And what's their ERA? And if Robinson Cano, heaven forbid, have a little injury or a thing, who steps up? Because I can tell you, with Oakland, when somebody goes down, there's always another player to fill the void. And that's the difference between a perennial right now and a team that is on the rise. Again, not taking anything away from Seattle, but just saying don't expect the miracle like you saw in the 95 season, like you saw in 2001 with 116 victories and then, you know, hoping for the World Series after that. it's just not going to happen with this Bucs.
You brought up 1995 and the season that saved baseball in Seattle. Over the weekend, manager Lou Piniella brought back to Seattle to be enshrined in the Seattle Mariners Hall of Fame, and he had great words for his former players, coaches, people that got him and helped him to get to where he was, over 800 victories as a Mariner manager. And he also had great words for the current team, telling them they're good, believe that they can do it, and go do it and make the city proud of them.
Yeah. And what is Lou Piniella supposed to say, really? What's he supposed to say? The city of Seattle adores Lou Piniella and that 95 team. But what he's saying deep down inside is yes, you can go do it, but you're not the 95 team. And if anybody thinks that this team can do what the 95 team did, they're sadly mistaken. Because that team in 95, as we've talked about before, had tremendous all-stars all up and down the roster. And so I don't see that in Seattle. Therefore, it would be fool's gold to think that they would be able to do anything else.
Well, I sure hope that at the BBS studios, Don is definitely double recording this episode so we can bring it back, say, middle, end of September, 1st of October, and revisit the words from not only yourself, Mr. Boyd, but what I'm saying as well, and see which path the Mariners go down.
Yeah, and again, I think my path is more realistic as far as where Seattle is going to go. And so, but like you're saying, we'll see. And if Seattle does wind up, again, do they beat Oakland or do they beat Detroit? I know that both of those franchises have beefed up their pitching tremendously. And even though Seattle has the best ERA in the majors as we speak, it is not by much. And you're talking about an Oakland and a Detroit franchise that are within, I think, 2.20 in ERA. So let's not bolster it that much. And I can tell you that Detroit, they would laugh at the whole ordeal just for the fact that they have three Cy Young pitchers in their stadium.
Sean Boyd, we've got a lot of time to talk baseball. And one thing we haven't touched on before we get out of here for show 65 is that of the Oakland Raiders preseason game one this past weekend and what they're hoping to accomplish moving forward in game two this next weekend.
Well, if you were looking for something exciting this past weekend, watching the Oakland Raiders play in their preseason game, you were highly disappointed. But for the most part, Sean, I would think that, looking back on it all, when you look at what Matt Schaub did, there are a couple of incomplete passes that should have been completion. I would say the offense pretty much did what I thought that they were going to do. You can tell that Darren McFadden is not going to be content with being the second running back to Maurice Jones-Drew. Both had great games as far as the minimal amount of carries that they had. Well, who I was most excited about, and I mentioned it before, was the third running back, which I believe is the future of the Oakland Raiders, and that's Latavius Murray. Latavius Murray, this young man is going to be a jewel. So much that I believe that what we're talking about now is moving Marcel Reese and making him the hybrid player. That's going to be my word for the day. Moving him from fullback to tight end. And if that's the case, then I believe that Marcel Reese is more the suitor at tight end since he played wide receiver at the University of Washington. Then you could start to move Latavius Murray in a two-back set for the Oakland Raiders, and I think that you'll start to see some more fluidity in the offense. What scared me in this last game was the lack of defense. So you're talking about all of these people that were added, Justin Tuck and Mar Woodley as free agents. And of course, you had Khalil Mack, which, to be honest with you, Sean, I wasn't too impressed with his first game. I touted him as being, one of the up-and-coming, he looked pretty much average. You know, I mean, he shed a couple of blocks, but he wasn't, you know, that strong presence that, that you saw covering or you saw filling the gaps. And so with that being said, I think Oakland has some things to improve on, and we'll look to see if they can improve on those in the next week.
Any concern at the quarterback position or offense in general, as Matt Schaub had three series, not even one first down?
Yeah, I'm not too concerned about that. When you're talking about preseason, again, as I mentioned before, you're talking about a base offense and a base defense. So teams aren't going to show all the things that they're working on in practice thus far. I think there's a little bit of gamesmanship in preseason. Let's face it, when you turn on, you know, the NFL Network, ESPN, or whatever the media outlets are, 9 times out of 10, if not 10 out of 10, the broadcasters are going to say something extremely negative about Oakland. And I believe that Dennis Allen is going to continue to, you know, play that role until the actual first game of season starts, where Oakland will play the New York Jets in New York. And then we will see, you know, what the offense will entail. I am a little bit concerned about the receiver situation. I don't see any receivers that are actually stepping out and making a big name for themselves. But again, it's only been 1 week. But I would say that, you know, Oakland will be fine. More importantly, I'm concerned about that defense, because there's a lot of effort that was put in the offseason to building a presentable defense. And so if Oakland can have any type of improvement from last year, they should have a better run.
And how are the Raiders looking on the injury front? Anything creeping up and biting them so far in the preseason?
Well, knock on wood, so far so good. The only big name injury thus far is DJ Hayden, a defensive back cornerback. That's, you know, this is his second year, you know, coming out of the University of Houston, and he is still on the physically unable to perform list. Sounds like he is in camp right now, and he was practicing, and I believe he has the red shirt on, and he's looking to get into some of the 7-on-7 drills that they do in practice. So that's a good sign. But outside of that, you know, the Raiders are looking very healthy, and that's a big key, Sean. They want to go into the beginning of the season without any nicks, things, look to get off to a great start.
And remind our Raider Nation listeners what they can look forward to in week 2 of the preseason. The Raiders play who coming up this weekend?
Oh, man, you got me on this. I do not have it. I'm sorry.
All right. Well, I'll fill you in on who the Seattle Seahawks get to tackle. And that is their first home game of the preseason. They welcome the San Diego Chargers up the coast, and our good buddy, friend of the show, Eric Williams, writing for ESPN.com for the Chargers, will be in town, coming back to the Pacific Northwest. And week 2 of the preseason has the Chargers visiting the Seahawks. And really, in Seattle, I mean, it was a tough game Thursday night, with the nearly an hour lightning delay, not a lot of continuity or fluidity to the game because of that, and a lot of penalties. And I can report for Sean Boyd and Raider Nation that we have the Detroit Lions visiting the Oakland Raiders on August 15th, and one Golden Tate heading to O.co.
Yeah, so that game is a 7 p.m. game. You know, Detroit coming into town. We pretty much play Detroit every year in the preseason. It's one of those games that's just kind of a ho-hummer, but it's a home game. I know that the Raider Nation will definitely, you know, come out in numbers, especially in the Black Hole, and to see what this what the Oakland Raiders are all about. So, one of the things that I wanted to ask you, Sean, of course, being, watching the Hawks up there playing, and I'm hearing some murmurs that Terrell Pryor actually had a decent and strong football game last week. So what's your take on that?
Well, I guess it depends who you ask, because some people say that and others say it was okay. But as you know, seeing him the last few years in Oakland, his accuracy was in question and his decision making. And going into the final drive of the game for Seattle, down 20-16, Pryor was driving in the red zone with an opportunity to win the game. And he did not get it done, throwing an interception to end the game. And if there's one thing Pete Carroll hates, it's turnovers. And the only thing he hates more than turnovers is turnovers in the red zone. So Pryor did make good throws. He did have some good reads. But at the same time, at the end of the game, game on the line, you can win it right here. The opposite happens. So there's a good learning curve there for Pryor and the entire Seattle team, as obviously they didn't do enough things right to win the game. And it'll be interesting to see how Pryor and the team respond in week two.
So what I was gathering was that it was the actual receiver that dropped the ball or tipped the ball, and then the interception occurred. I didn't see the play, but it sounded like, you know, TP was doing some great things, moving it up and down the field. More importantly, is he going to be the number two quarterback, or will that be Tavares Jackson?
I don't see any way he catapults over Jackson. Jackson is too smart. He's been in the league longer. He's started many more games. He's had more success than Pryor. Pryor, the all-around better athlete. I don't doubt that. But the bigger question is, will Pete Carroll and John Schneider keep a third quarterback? If they do, Pryor is probably safe and set. But do they want to take that position away from another area on the team? And that remains to be seen.
And that sounds right along the lines of what's going on down in Santa Clara as well. Blaine Gabbert, the second-string quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers, had a pretty beleaguered game this past weekend. So they're looking for more solid things from Blaine Gabbert. Of course, last year the 49ers had Colt McCoy, and as their second-string quarterback, I don't think that they want to keep three in the stable just because they have some areas as well, meaning the 49ers have some areas that they want to fill up. Also, of course, you know, the 49ers having some issues with the offensive line. Alex Boone has not reported to camp yet, and so that is a huge concern. So maybe the 49ers would look to fill that void by not keeping the third quarterback as well.
Wow, Sean, didn't they just get throttled in Baltimore?
Well, I just think that it's, you know, one of those things that Big Brother always lets Little Brother know that, hey, no matter what you do, I'm always going to be the teacher. And so, you know, you get invited to Baltimore if you're the San Francisco 49ers, and you get to hang out with your brother and his team, even though you picked up Laquan Bolden and gone to the NFC Championship and Super Bowl in the past 2 years. You know, Big Brother John lets you know that, hey, things haven't changed. And so, you know, I think it was humbling for Jim Harbaugh, and I know that they're going back to the drawing board. If I were to make a prognostication this early, as far as the NFC West is concerned, I would probably say that 49ers would have to be a little bit cautious before they start thinking that they can just run the table and do some damage in the NFC West.
That's the voice of Sean Boyd in Sacramento, California. I'm Sean Wally, Tri-Cities, Washington, on the Double with the Double S Express, show 65. Sean, it's been a pleasure having you around for the majority of 65 shows, and we look to get 66 rolling next week.
And it's always a pleasure to be on the Double with the Double S Express. Of course, Sean, if they wanted to send us any information, thoughts, or whatever, you could send them to. Man, we haven't said this in a while. You can send it to Sean, S-H-A-W-N, at double-s-express.com, or to Sean, S-E-A-N, at double-s-express.com. Where can they catch us in syndication, Mr. Wallace?
so many options, almost too many options. You've got our BBS Radio show page, bbsradio.com/DSX. Otherwise, our website has links to our BBS show page, and that is double-s-express.com. We've got an iTunes podcast page as well as our podcast on Stitcher Radio. So if you're a fan of the Double S Express, you should be able to find any show, anytime, 24/7. Live shows, of course, here, double-s-express.com, bbsradio.com/DSX. And who can forget the new cell phone app for Android or iPhone, the BBS Radio app, Station 2.
Yes, with our awesome, awesome statistician and technician, Don Newsom. Thank you for putting it all together for us and making things happen. And of course, Sean, it's been an awesome, awesome show.
Absolutely, and huge thank you to Bill Wixie, big-time guest number one tonight, morning news anchor, Q13 Fox in Seattle. Follow Bill at Bill Wixie on Twitter. Big-time guest number two tonight, unlimited hydroplane driver Jimmy Shane, behind the wheel of the Oh Boy Oberto. Follow Jimmy at Jimmy Shane 1. Show 65 of On the Double in the books. Find us online on Twitter, social media, Facebook. Like our Facebook page. Send us an email. Show 65, all but wrapped up. For Sean Boyd, I'm Sean Wally. Don Newsom back at BBS Radio. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for great sports talk and big-time guests. On the Double with the Double S Express.